toxic in nature, and based on LC-MS data, it seems that more than 10 compounds are present in the fraction between 3 and 4 meters, and some of these compounds have substitutive aromatic structures. So on the whole, the successful isolation of feeding detritus from the crude extract provides convincing evidence of a biochemical basis of post-plant resistance and wallman. So in future, chromatographic analysis of the fraction between 3 and 4 meters will be done.
Aerial microscopy give you a true life color. Compound microscopy, we're working with slide-mounted images. Obviously, you can see internal structures. I'm an acarologist by training, so you're going to have to suffer through some mic pictures. But anyway, in the center, that's typically how acarologists know their organisms. And finally, the SEM gives us a little more detail, as you will see. So just a comparison, basically, of conventional SEM techniques versus the low-temperature techniques. As far as specimen preparation is concerned, with conventional SEM, as many of you know, it's a lab. And here's another family of mites, the Tibiids. These are fungal feeders. This is Luria formosa. It's on a citrus leaf feeding on fungus, but here you can see all the various life stages. You have adults, the eggs in the back, a nymph in the foreground. And this is kind of a gross overview, and then you can really rifle right down into it, and there's the tarsal claw of these things. Now, my master's work, I spent about 2 years accounting for invisible hairs on the backs and bodies and legs of invisible creatures. If that's not a recipe for insanity, I don't really know what is, but this helps out when you have this and you don't have to rely completely on crossing your eyes under the compound microscope. So you see very detailed structures, and you can find new characters, obviously. Probably the most famous mite out there, at least in the agricultural realm, is the two-spotted spider mite. Here's the female and the male. And you can see, obviously, the host material. You see the stomata in the background. Another closely related family is the peacock mite. I'll just cruise through some of these to illustrate that. Oh, here's an insect for you. There's an aphid. there's a nymph. Here's another mite, and this, now we begin to look at some of the associations that we can preserve. Here's mate guarding by the broad mite. It's holding on to a nymphal female, waiting for her to emerge. Here's an image of a mosquito head with some parasitic water mites. I guess I call this payback. And here's an aphid mummy, and here you go, Matt, there's your parasitic Hymenoptera peeking out, barely. Formosan termite with a head full of deuteronymphs. And Varroa, the Varroa mite on the back of a honeybee. But you can see how, the hairs are preserved wonderfully in the bee. And here's the tracheal mite of the honeybee, and that's looking right down a honeybee trachea. It's a little invasive technique to mount this guy up, but, what we do for science. So this kind of captures the strength of this technology in that we have here a full ecosystem. We have a bark beetle, and this is the declivity on the back of an Ips beetle. And in there we have nematodes and tarsinemid mites, and for a long time they thought the tarsinemid mites were a potentially good biocontrol agent for these bark beetles, until we looked in really close, and at the bottom you'll see the tarsinemid mite is actually eating the nematode who apparently was doing the damage on the beetle. So we did the beetle a favor by augmenting the mites. Okay, now let's talk a little bit about remote sampling. I'll move through these slides pretty quickly. One of the key things about LTSEM is that you want to work from fresh material. Okay, you want to work from live specimens, obviously, to try and capture some of these images. So it doesn't lend itself to going into the museum collections and pulling things out. And so one of the problems that we have is, how do we get fresh material to the lab to mount up to get ready to scope the image? So what we tried to attack was, well, can we decouple preparation from actual imaging and take the prep setup out into the field under various conditions and send the specimens back to the lab and image at our leisure. Okay, so the first one is, this is what makes it possible. This is a dry shipping container. This is a, I got to write it through. This is a glorified thermos. Basically, you fill it with cryogen, it takes in the cold, but there's no liquid in it, so FedEx is pretty cool with shipping these back and forth. This is NASA's cold land process and field experiments conducted in Wyoming and Colorado. So basically, it's a remote sensing experiment where they did a lot of field studies to compare what they're finding on the ground in terms of snow structure and water content with their satellite imagery. So this is a harsh environment. You're out here in the snow, and sometimes it's shallow, sometimes it's deep. They had to dig snow pits. Here's our setup in the field, all the gear. There's the cryo chambers, our styrofoam boxes, and here we are. This is obviously in the spring, or working with liquid nitrogen makes you immune to the snow. I don't know. So you collect samples from the pits, and we have snowflakes. Tis the season, so this is some examples of various snowflakes from various depths, how they metamorphose. And this is my project in Costa Rica. I joined the ALICE team. Most of you probably know about this project. That they did a transect. I was at the 2,000 meter site, so I had to carry all that gear up the mountain. We had nice facilities up there. We were able to set up in the lab. You can see, I saved weight, so I cut my styrofoam box down to about a third its size. So that really helped on the hike. So here's the lab setup, and then we took it out into the field, and I set up, trail side. So, the Colorado experiment shows you can do it in the cold. I'm showing that you can do it in the hot and humid. And running late, here it is. And these are the guys that we pulled out. All right, here's a pseudoscorpion. Obviously, he was uncooperative. That's why he only has one help there. some white flies, cryptostomatid mites down in the soil. There he is head on. And a couple of platypoda beetles. So anyway, it's good for field studies. We've used it in quarantine situations. This is the red palm mite, most recent invasive pest, showed up in Florida last week. And using this technique, we showed that they feed through the stomata, first discovery of this type in these mites, and it explains a lot of the nutrient deficiency symptoms that we see in the plant. Summary, the short of it is that remote sampling is possible. It's just a matter of taking advantage of it. Thank you.
Today about some technology we've been working on over the last couple of years to do remote imaging. First, I want to start off by going back and looking at some of the age-old obstacles that especially in taxonomy we deal with all the time, because that's sort of the background for this. This picture illustrates one of those, a UPS truck that's slammed into a FedEx truck. We ship specimens around the world all the time, and these are very, very fragile and very valuable, and that costs a lot of time and money. And of course, what we're really worried about many times is that we'll lose one of these valuable, irreplaceable specimens. On top of that, there's a lot of time lost in our research, moving things around, and especially in the line of work where I come from, where we're doing identifications. I remember when we first started working on the Emerald Ash Borer, it took us weeks to get a specimen to Europe so we could verify an identification. There's also this kind of haven't we been here before thing going on, where each generation that comes along needs to go back and restudy the same types again, pull them out of the cabinets and rehandle them, take a chance on breaking those, and we're always sort of starting from scratch. So how this got started was a little over 4 years ago at a meeting in South Africa. A number of us were sitting around sort of brainstorming and talking about technology and where things might go, and doing a lot of, well, what if we could do this type of conversation? And it occurred to us, what if we could work remotely with specimens? For example, say I wanted to look at a type, but rather than go to London or wait for 3 weeks, I could just log onto a computer, view, manipulate, and photograph that from wherever I was, whether I happened to be in D.C. or whether I was on the road somewhere. no matter whether it was London or DC, that should not be a problem. We'd want to be able to combine real-time specimen viewing and then add on some extra touches like video conferencing and instant messaging. And from that...
Thank you folks for being here today. I'm going to talk today. I was originally going to title my talk, Hello, My Name is Species X, because what my intention was to talk about the interactions between taxonomy and systematics, where my field of research is, and conservation. I'm not a conservationist in certain regard, or not nearly as much a conservationist as many of the other people who are organizing this meeting or are here today. But I've had the pleasure, because Oregon State is so close to the Xerces Society, of interacting with a lot of conservation-oriented people and hosting them in our museum. The title in the program is The Systematic Imperative, Knowledge Needed for Effective Conservation. And so throughout today's talk, I kind of thought, oh, great, I'm going to get there and talk about taxonomy and conservation. And, of course, that's going to be like preaching to the choir, so to speak. You know, how would we be able to assess and measure and monitor biodiversity without names, without name tags? I'm looking out right now. Everyone's got their name tag on. We really are in a conundrum if we can't communicate effectively about biodiversity. But then when I started thinking more deeply about the issue involved and how complicated conservation is, especially for someone, I know many of the conservationists maybe think taxonomy and species delimitations are complicated, but from taxonomists and many of the talks we saw earlier, you can see that the field of conservation is equally complex. And so the way in which taxonomy and systematics might interact with something as complicated as conservation is today, which deals with single species, habitat restoration, habitat, how do we designate habitat, government, NGO policy, dealing with the public, dealing with outreach. All of these involve taxonomy and systematics in certain regards, and what is it that taxonomists can do to help with that, and what is it the conservationists can potentially be aware of or help support to help us make those tools available for conservation. Already Scott alluded to one of the similarities, even though conservationists and systematists have many of the same goals involved. We both study and probe biodiversity, hoping to understand it better and conserve it. There are some elements of both of our approaches that sometimes hit people in the wrong way and can seem very incongruent with each other's missions. I hope by the end of my talk, and I think actually by the end of this symposium, we will have demonstrated that, yes, there are some differences approaches. Clearly, a systematist sees this beautiful drawer of Taylor's checker spot as like a gold mine, where, of course, a conservationist sees a bunch of dead butterflies. It'd be much better if those were flying freely in the field. And so how do we balance these different of perceptions and different needs in order to accomplish our goals and hopefully work together? So my talk today is kind of divided into three parts. The first, I'm going to talk a little bit more detailed about systematics and conservation, or where I see them fitting together. Then I'm going to address what I think are some of the threats to incorporating poor or incomplete systematics into conservation efforts. And then what are some of these tools, or what are some ways that perhaps conservation and